Hello, everyone. The clip you're about to hear is from one of our exclusive Patreon episodes on a recent horror release, and just like all of our other episodes, it might include major spoilers for said horror release, so don't listen to it if you haven't already seen it. You've officially been warned. And if you'd like to hear the full episode, just head on over to patreon.com/horrorqueers and subscribe today. Without further ado, here is your exclusive Patreon clip.
We should probably also address the fact that there's no queerness here anymore. And yeah. I'm not interested in apologizing for doing comparisons. Like, let's just acknowledge these are scenes that we're going to compare. But particularly here, like, I was looking to see whether this film was going to step up and acknowledge, because we don't have a Hays Code, so we can actually fucking talk about lesbianism. And no. There isn't even a hint. It hasn't even been dialed back. It's been erased. There's no lesbian content here anymore.
And I'm really bummed out by that fact. And that's why I think, again, by the time the film ended, I was like, oh, we're going for like a feminist thing where it's like, oh, we're going to a female empowerment tale where it's like, oh, we're going to follow this protagonist as she gains agency, as she gets power, and then she beats the evil villain. Lesbianism doesn't fit into that story. And I would disagree.
Yeah, like, I don't see them as mutually exclusive at all.
At all. And that's the thing, too. Yeah, like, when she has... You have a negligee in Kristin Scott Thomas's hands, but there's just no hint of it. And, of course, we should point out, like, it does cue closer to Du Maurier's story in that she was Rebecca's caretaker, like, since she was a child. Mm-hmm. Whereas in Hitchcock's film, she had just met Rebecca when she came to the house. And Hitchcock did explicitly make Danvers more queer than Du Maurier implied. Mm-hmm. But nevertheless, reading the book, you see those implications there.
Yeah. And here it feels very motherly. Like, she does say that she loved Rebecca at one point, and there's
before she kills herself.
Yeah. But there's no like love. It's very much, oh, I loved her because I thought that she was an amazing person, and I think that you suck.
Yeah. I just don't understand. You know, I actually, it's coming out as of this recording tomorrow, so by the time this recording drops, it'll already be out. But I did write a piece for Shudder's The Bite newsletter on Rebecca and why this is a really good time to do it, because the themes of the novel, which is just, you know, abusive relationships, gaslighting, things like that. Yeah. It's a really good time, especially in a post-Me Too world, to deal with that. And again, when you couldn't really have explicit queerness. And again, I'm not saying I want Mrs. Danvers to be talking about how, like, sexually attracted she was to Rebecca.
Yeah.
There's subtlety that you can do with that role to make it at least clear. Mm-hmm. And it is kind of mind-boggling that you're going to take this story in 2020 and redo it and change things about it, but not hone in on the things that maybe couldn't have been honed in on in the 30s and 40s. It feels like such a missed opportunity to me.
Yeah, I was just about to say that exact same phrase. It's like there were opportunities here in a number of different ways, but particularly with regard to the content that you couldn't do at the time. And it's weird that they then step up when it comes to Maxim in the conclusion, but then here it's like, well, do the kids like lesbians? Are lesbians popular? Maybe we should get rid of lesbians.
I would argue, though, that softening Max up actually does a disservice to even the female empowerment thing, because he's not enough of an antagonist against number two to, like, make it even feel kind of earned at the end.
Oh, no. I mean, that honestly is my biggest problem, is that the softening and the quickening of these key scenes and these central tensions and conflicts renders this film boring and bland. Mm-hmm. Like, Mrs. Danvers isn't a credible threat because she doesn't get enough to do and she doesn't have enough motivation. And Maxim is boring and he's barely here. So, like, we're basically just watching this blonde bitch walk around a mansion for 2 hours.
Murder in America is a true crime podcast that covers stories from all 50 states, including stories of mass shootings, serial killers, and lesser-known murders. Do you find yourself doing more research after listening to a true crime show? Well, Courtney and I used to do the same thing, and that's why we created Murder in America. Our podcast dives deep into each case. Our storytelling will make you feel like you're right there within the case with us, watching it all play out, and we do not shy away from the graphic details. If you're a fan of true crime, then listen to Murder in America on Spotify now.